Traveling the Vortex.
We've joined the Doctor as he travels the Vortex and arrive at episode number 370, also known as Starship Troopers. I'm Keith.
Oh, yeah. Totally. Didn't think about that. I'm Sean.
How did you not think about that? They brought it up in the episode.
I know.
I'm glad.
I didn't think about it till now. I think I thought of it at the time and then forgot about it because I was busy this weekend.
How was your weekend?
It's a little busy.
What'd you do?
I hurt.
You hurt?
I hurt a lot. We did Planet Comic Con this weekend, which as always was a blast and a lot of fun and a ton of work. And while there were moments where I began to question whether or not the fun was worth the work, at the end of the day, I was like, yeah, it probably was. But then I went home and went to bed and got up the next morning and couldn't move. Like, literally. People say, oh, I literally couldn't get out of bed. No, I literally couldn't get out of bed. It was 2 hours late to work this morning. We had a lot of fun. We had a good time, and panels ran smoothly, which was my area of,
No stages collapsed?
No stages collapsed. Good. We did have to, we got out there a little bit Sunday and got our autographs, met with Sinequa Martin-Green, met her, met Kevin Conroy, the voice of Batman, Danny Trejo. But yeah, we had a lot of fun, so I won't bore you with details. They have already announced dates for next year, so it's in March. End of March, so mark your calendars, and hopefully y'all can come see us. Yes, I did make it out to Black Panther. We did that for our Thursday night event. Did you guys ever get to?
Yes.
Mason and I went and saw it last night.
Do we want to talk about that now?
Sure.
I thought it was great.
I did too.
I really liked it.
I enjoyed it a lot. I don't know if it's as much around the hype that everybody's given it as the best Marvel movie yet, but
It seems like we get that line every time a new movie comes out.
Maybe.
Except for maybe Ant-Man.
I don't think that came with Ant-Man, and I don't think that came from Age of Ultron either. I don't think it came with either.
No, it didn't definitely come with it.
I don't think it came with, even though this is quasi-related, Spider-Man Homecoming. I mean, they said it was the best Spider-Man. Some people said it was the best Spider-Man movie.
Yeah.
We also went and saw The Addams Family, the musical. Topeka West did it, and my daughter Caitlin is Grandma Addams in it, or was Grandma Addams. It's closed now, but it was a lot of fun.
I watched a couple other movies. Watched Attack the Block, which was really enjoyable. Very different, but a lot of fun. And then I watched Cloverfield Paradox.
What did you think?
I enjoyed it. I really liked it. I think I fall on the other side of it with you, though. I think I would have enjoyed it more had the Cloverfield connections not been there.
All right, well, what do we got in the news?
Well, revealed that Gallifrey won this year. And it's been rumored for a while, but he has confirmed it. Murray Gold, he is no longer composing the music for Doctor Who.
Aww.
Which we sort of saw it coming because we did see the rumors of that.
Yes.
And I think they were pretty good rumors. I mean, pretty solid evidence on those rumors, too. So it doesn't come as a surprise, but it really is sad.
It is. It's been such a staple of the sound of the show since it came back. It's going to be interesting to see who they get because they haven't announced who it's going
to
be
yet. I have to say, though, because it's not the guy that did Broadchurch. He finally came out on Twitter. Oh, yeah, he finally came out on Twitter and said, okay, the rumors have been fun, but now I can finally confirm it's not me.
I wonder if he was in negotiations and it fell through.
I don't know.
And that's why he can now say it's not me.
Well, I think it's because they hadn't officially announced that Murray had left is why he couldn't say that he wasn't doing it. So, because if he says, well, I'm not doing it, then that might cause some friction, but
where's Mary Girl going?
Or give some give some weight to the rumor anyway.
I
can't say that it's a bad thing. I like Mary Gold. I think he's done a good job. I think the last year of Doctor Who, especially, I didn't notice as much difference in the soundtrack, and so I don't think that he was phoning it in, but I also don't think he was coming up with new and original material for the series. And that being said, I'm actually encouraged by the fact that we're going to wipe the slate clean and do something different, because I think it's time for a change, and we've made one major change. Let's go ahead and go full tilt and see what we can do with it. I'm actually quite excited to see a new team across the board to see what they can do.
I would say there's probably two major changes. You've got a new doctor and you've got a new showrunner. New companion.
I think the major change is the Doctor is what I'm talking about.
New TARDIS.
But
well, I can't blame Murray Gold for wanting to kind of be done. How many variations of music for a show can you make for 10 years?
Well, it's been 10 years that he's been doing it.
It's a really long time.
You probably couldn't name a composer that's been on a show that long.
No, you really couldn't.
I couldn't.
Plus several different variations on the theme tune already. I mean,
but if you can name a composer, send some feedback to Traveling Martinez. Let
Dr.
us know.
Phil. Yeah, Dr. Phil, this one's right up your alley.
Our last bit of news is Titan Comics has announced a couple of new comic lines. The first one, not too surprisingly, the 13th Doctor is coming in autumn.
Woo!
Time to coincide with the first full television series. Written by Jody Hauser, who has also written comics for Orphan Black, Star Wars Rogue One, and among other things.
If I'm not mistaken, it's a complete female team, and it's a female artist.
Will be Rachel Stott, and colorist Enrica Angiolini.
What? Not Hi-Fi?
Not Hi-Fi.
Although Hi-Fi, I think, is a guy and a female team.
Oh.
Yeah. Because they were on a podcast that I was listening to one time. Might have been panel to panel. I'm not sure of that.
Oh, so that's exciting, but not too surprising.
Not surprising.
Found a bit more surprising is that they have announced a 7th Doctor miniseries.
I found it less surprising when they had a flashback scene in the comics we're going to review. In fact, it's funny that I saw that announcement and then read the comics and went, oh, okay, well, that obviously they've got the rights to the characters because they just showed them to us in the comics. So. Plus, he was one of the images in the 9th Doctor.
Well, they've used every
that we had seen
image, haven't they?
I think only of the ones that they own the rights to.
I think we've seen costumes.
Yes.
Okay.
We've seen from the back hints or something, and we've seen things like that, but we haven't seen.
Because I know we've
faces.
Seen Troughton's face, but we haven't had a Troughton.
Well, we did see Troughton's face,
and we've had a Davison face, but we haven't got a 5 series. I can't remember if we've had.
Well, if they got 7, I'm sure they're just working their way
back.
Yeah,
I was going to say, 6 is the only other one I can't think of if we've seen. I guess 1, 2.
Now, 7 will be like everybody else. It's not ongoing. It's just a miniseries.
Right, it's just going to be a miniseries. But it's being written by Ben Aaronarevich.
Yeah.
And
Andrew Cartmell. Yeah.
So this is his team writing a comic story for him.
And the one thing I was disappointed with is it's only a 3-issue arc, if I'm not mistaken. A 3-issue miniseries.
Yeah, 3-part comic series.
Which kind of was like, aw. But that's the way they wrote them in those days.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Each issue would be an episode.
It'll still work.
Yeah.
Now, Andrew Cartmell has written 4 Seventh Doctor comics before. Because one of his stories was in the collection we read, the Mandragora collection that we had read.
Yeah. And Ben, they both have written in novel form for the Seventh Doctor.
Right.
So it's also nice that it's coinciding with the 30th anniversary of Remembrance of the Daleks. I'm trying to see if there's a release date.
We should get him back on the show.
Andrew?
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe he'll come near here and we can do that.
Yeah.
Maybe we Skype him.
We could.
I think I have his contact information somewhere.
Let's do it.
Yes.
Okay, hold on.
Boop, 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 boop. Cool. Boop. Well, that's exciting news.
yeah.
How about feedback?
We have a bit of feedback this week.
What? Feedback?
Feedback.
Sean should have a song since we've got feedback this week.
Here's my feedback song. It's not very long. I'm not prepared to read your feedback on my phone. So I'll sing another verse of my feedback song. Yadda 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 jazz hands. How'd you like that one?
That was a nice variation.
Nah. Not very good.
Glenn's not happy. Glenn's never happy.
A feedback song is better than no feedback song.
I expect
song.
A better one next week.
You can expect in one hand. And
if you want to hear Sean do another feedback song,
a better
send us
song.
Some feedback this next week, and then we'll have an excuse to have him do another feedback song.
I have to do the song before we get to the feedback, so how will we know if there's feedback, if the song warrants the feedback?
You just made that up off the top of your head now anyway. You can do it again. Just do it better.
Mark Jones writes, Lethbridge Stewart, United in Blood. Hello. I am the author of the Lethbridge-Stewart short story United in Blood, which was included in the Havoc Files 4. I've just heard your review of the story in Traveling the Vortex 363, and I would like to thank all of you for your positive comments. You're all most astute in your views. As someone who viewed the first ever episode of Doctor Who and who grew up with the unit stories, I was able to channel a number of influences into the narrative. You're quite right with the Seeds of Doom. And to this, you could add the Stones of Blood, Children of the Stones, Quartermass, etc. The village of Alderbury is a real place and has been used for location filming over many years, including The Saint, The Avengers, that's the Emma Peel one, not the Iron Man one, Department S, The Champions, etc. Indeed, in Candy Jar Books' brief, the Lethbridge-Stewart stories are intended to have the feel of these shows about them. The Greyhound Pub is real. I've enjoyed many a drink there, and yes, I did feel that Nicholas Courtney would have been right at home at the bar. Lastly, again, you are quite correct, the ending is too rushed. My original manuscript had so much more action and plot, and indeed, I would have liked to have expanded it into a full novel. However, the demands of the publisher and the page count limit led to some severe editing. Thanks again, and my best wishes to you all from a very wet and windy Wales. Mark Jones.
Thank you, Mark.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you, Mark.
And I'm glad you liked our review.
Yeah.
And I certainly understand about the needs of the publisher. That that one guy, we won't mention him by name, but he's kind of a slave driver over there at Candy Jar.
He really cracks that whip.
He's very demanding. I kid.
Also do want to mention that Robert Mamoan, who we reviewed Travers and Wells a few weeks ago, he gave us a shout-out on his he gave us a shout out on his blog just recently talking about the release of Travers and Wells. So thank you very much.
I hope it was good. The book was good.
Yeah.
It was a good shout out.
Of course, you can send us feedback by going to our website, travelingthevortex.com, and fill out the Send Us Feedback tab, or send it directly to feedback@travelingthevortex.com. 1L.
And you can hear Sean sing another feedback song.
Yes.
If you're good. If you deserve it.
All right, let's move on to our reviews.
That's true. It's been a while. They deserve something.
We're in Dawn. This is a full-scale war. We're in a humankind locked in a deadly struggle for survival. When did that happen? The Doctor and Lucy land right in the middle of one of the human race's bloodiest periods of history. Trying to make a difference here would be like standing up and calling for a ceasefire on the Somme. Somme? Is that right?
S-O-M-M-E?
Yeah.
I know where it is, but I don't know how it's pronounced.
Certain death, or worse, survival can be a messy business.
It's one of those World War One.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bum, bum, bum.
I liked this one.
I did two.
I did three. I don't know that I liked it overly beyond what it was. It was a good story. It's kind of interesting that the Eighth Doctor Adventures seem to have gotten into this, let's reuse all of Tom Baker's bad guys.
Especially this run.
We had Morbius, and then we had the Crinoid, and now we've got the Wearing, and it's like, ooh, what's next? But I'm fine with it, because those guys, you know, we didn't get to see a lot of them. It's not like those ones that Glenn likes with the suction and the plunger, and I'm tired of them. He's just nodding. But
And the fact that they start using them in new and different ways too, or exploring different aspects to these villains that we're so familiar with because we've rewatched the story over and over and over. And of course,
yeah, I saw somebody went and tackled was that you or
both of us? Did you listen to Race Memory?
I did.
No, I was talking about Ark in Space.
I listened to I watched
you watch Ark in Space again.
Yeah, of course.
It's such a good one.
Yeah, it is.
I couldn't find the time with the con. It was like, I really want to.
I was able to find the downtime at work to have it on in the background while I did other stuff.
If I have a complaint, it's a minor one, and it's kind of nebulous too, so maybe I shouldn't mention it, but the story feels familiar. And
it's Starship Troopers.
Well, even beyond that, yes.
Okay. All right.
Within the realm of Doctor Who, it feels like this is something specifically that Barnaby Edwards has tackled in this manner, that he's written a story about... Nicholas Briggs, pardon me. That he's written a story, or we've had a story that Big Finish has done about a genetic memory transfer. And just with a different bad guy. It felt like a template that was taken from one story and moved to another. but I couldn't put my finger on why it sounded familiar to me. And I'll be honest, I didn't have time to do the research this week. So maybe, I don't know if you guys noticed that or not. Maybe I'm just completely talking out
race,
my ear.
The race memory aspect of it has cropped up in, I think, a couple of different stories throughout the show's run.
And that's a pretty big science fiction thing. So you can't necessarily fault them for that. Trope.
Well, it's made mention, too, in Ark in Space and, obviously, Race Memory. So.
Yeah. Having listened to Race Memory, it almost serves as a bridge. Well, it does serve as a bridge and really almost sets up what's happening in War and Dawn.
I would agree.
Let's talk a little bit about Race Memory. I didn't get a chance to listen to it. You guys did. And I didn't know this was a thing. Glenn, you take point on this.
Yeah, this actually, BBV Productions did this audio back in February of 2001. It was a CD that they released. They must have clearly gotten the rights to the Wirren. They did a lot of stories back in the day. I think they're still around, actually. But that were quasi-related to Doctor Who, but didn't actually use the main property. Sarah Sutton features in this one. She plays a character named Sarah. And it's about a group of it's only about four people. They're in a colony in did you get the impression it was in Antarctica or near Antarctica?
I can't remember where it was.
It's near Antarctica, like South America or something like that, very edge of the coast. That are doing these not even experiments. They're kind of cultivating different species of bugs in order to advance them and repopulate.
Yeah, they're trying to revitalize the Earth.
Right, revitalize
the
Earth.
So this is descendants from Nerva Beacon.
Right.
Back on Earth, trying to revive the planet pretty much.
Oh.
And these are focused on insects.
And they end up inadvertently reviving the race memory of the Wirren, which have kind of gone undercover within insects itself, and they end up cultivating a Wirren that ends up taking over, and its idea is to repopulate the Wirren by using their experiments or their chamber. I can't remember what the name of the chamber that they were going to use. It gets a little trippy at the end, but it's a really great story. Paul Ebbs wrote it, and he's done some other stuff with Doctor Who as well, but it was really good, and it's only about 60 minutes or so.
Yeah.
Really kind of encapsulated story, but it's a lot of fun.
And it plants that seed and gives the germ of an idea of the queen aspect of things, where it's not an Ark in Space at all.
Which I thought was interesting, because I thought that maybe Wirren Dawn, I got confused and thought Ebbs had written this one too, but I thought Wirren Dawn was going to be a reworking of Race Memory. I thought maybe it had, but there are some elements in there, but it's really its own story as well. But as Keith said, it does bridge that story and that expansion of the Queen and that kind of stuff. So it carries on the Race Memory information too. So I think maybe Nicholas Briggs, although he doesn't ever admit it in any of the interviews that I had heard that were attached to Wirren Dawn, he obviously came up with the story on his own, but I think maybe he might have borrowed some ideas from that, or expounded on the ideas that were placed forward in this story. So,
well, we can do a Wirren trilogy now.
Well, I had hoped you listened to it, because then I could have said this was a Wirren adversary archive, but
you can still say that. I have no problem being odd man out.
We did kind of sidestep here, but Keith, what'd you think of Race Memory?
I enjoyed it. I thought it was quite good. It was a nice sidestep away from kind of the show in general, but stayed in line with Who proper. It felt like a Doctor Who story without the Doctor in it.
Yeah.
And it helps that it's a sequel to one of my favorite stories. So any follow-up to Ark in Space is ripe material, I think.
And really, the quality of production is very near.
On spot as Big early Finish. As Big Finish
Exactly.
And like you said, it does get kind of trippy near the end, but I like that aspect.
It was a neat way to kind of advance things and tie things up at the end as well.
Yeah.
So officially, how many quasi-sequels have we had to Ark in Space then? Because we've had Ark,
Destination Nerva,
yeah. And then you technically can still count Revenge of the Cybermen, because they go back to Nerva.
It's true.
Yeah.
And then Race Memory.
And then Weirin Dawn.
And then Weirin Dawn. So they're, who knows well, how maybe, many well, other... Well, I guess Weirin is just more of a... It's the next Weirin story.
As well, I think to, that...
But
that,
they were introduced in that one, so.
I think what you have to look at it, though, is Ark in Space... I think quasi-sequels is a good descriptor because each of the stories take different elements of Ark in Space and go off and splinter off. So whereas Destination Nerva didn't really have anything to do with the Weirin, per se, it did, you know... have a lot to do with that colony, the space station itself, and that. So, and then obviously when they come back, and the Cybermen story takes place there, but has nothing to do with the Weirin because that issue's already been dispatched.
Right.
But splinters off into a different storyline for that connects to Nerva as well.
So. Maybe just that really showcases how good Ark in Space is, that you can keep going back to the well and pulling this thread. And go do something completely different with it.
Could be. I think so.
Interesting. So I will have to make sure to add Race Memory to my listen list then, because it sounds like it was a cool...
Yeah, it really was.
A cool bit of news.
But back to Weirin Dawn.
Once again, I think Lucy... She tickles me in a way that is I don't know, it's kind of strange that she'll start off in one direction... And there's a little part of me that's like, oh, we're going to get that Lucy, this one. But then she changes midstream, and it's like, oh, okay, no, cool, this is the other Lucy I like. But then she'll start to be completely bonkers Lucy, and it's just like, yeah, I love her. I don't really care what she does. She's so great. Especially when she starts to ramble. And my favorite bit from this one was, I had a friend who was a caterpillar.
Centipede.
I was friends with a centipede once. Because that matters. And I'm sure if the Doctor had been there, certainly one of the later incarnations, there would have been a talking to about, no, don't do that. That's still, you're insulting. Stop.
I had a little bit of frustration, not so much with the story, but just, I think I was supposed to feel the frustration of, I knew what was happening to the commander, of turning into the queen, and nobody else really seemed to realize it, even though the Doctor said this is what happens. But I think I was intended to, you know, feel those emotions while listening to the story.
Yeah, it's yet another in a pretty intense...
You idiot!
Well, Big Finish doing as graphically as they can get away with in audio, this transformation. So, of course, the listener is like, oh, yeah, we know what that is. And when she's lying there going, and you're going, oh, well, okay.
Even as far back as, oh, she's injured, a Weirin got her. I knew what happened. Yeah. And the Doctor shortly thereafter goes, well, you know, Weirin lay their eggs in their victims, and that's how they continue.
It's like the zombie movie where the guy gets bit but tries to hide it from the rest of the group, and it's like, dude, just own up to it and get killed.
Yeah.
Please, save us that bit of drama later. But okay, we'll let you play this out.
Yeah, because it adds drama.
I was less sure where I stood with... the one guy, the big burly, I assume he was big and burly. He sounded big and burly. A security officer.
Was that Farrell?
I think so.
No, that wasn't Farrell. That was a woman.
Oh, well, then no, it definitely was not Farrell. I'm so bad with names.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Unfortunately, I tend to treat names in these things kind of like sci-fi words. I just zip, skip right over that and move on and get to the... But first of all, he sounded familiar. I'm pretty sure he's been in several Big Finish productions. Most recent one, I think, was either Phobos or Deimos, whichever one of those was one of the earlier Eighth Doctor ones.
Oh, was it DeLong then? That was the only other one besides Soloway, Lucy, and the Doctor. And the obviously the...
Winslet? Who was Winslet?
At any rate, when he and Lucy are...
Farrell was the gal that got overtaken. She was the commander that...
Right.
Okay.
Was implanted.
Winslet was Colin Salmon from Silence in the Library, Forest of the Dead, and Arrow.
Oh, okay. Then I do know who that is. He's also been in the Pierce Brosnan Bond films.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dr. Moon.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Ah, yes.
I wasn't sure I liked his character.
I don't think you were supposed to.
Well, you weren't. But that was part of the problem. Is he, oh, you're playing that guy. Okay, yeah. We need to have that guy. That military guy. All right. And then he would start to kind of redeem, and you would get that almost weird kind of, well, maybe Lucy and him are going to have a thing relation. No, we're not. We're stopping that right now because we're fighting again. Okay. So character-wise, everything was a lot of fun. Once again, we get the TARDIS being blown into orbit, and it's like, oh my God! Oh, we're not concerned about it at all. Okay. Yeah.
I love the scene of them trying to get to the TARDIS.
Yeah, the spacesuit bit was really cool. That was
fantastic. The other guy...
Daniel Anthony.
Yeah.
Clyde in Sarah Jane Adventures.
Oh,
yeah,
really?
Yeah.
The young kid.
Whoa, okay.
The one that was Indig. They kept calling him an Indig.
Yeah. Cool. I don't know why I find that amazing. It's not like these actors don't work, but I always find
or have connections to the show in some way.
I always find it cool when we go, oh, that's who that was. They were in this? Nifty. I'm so simple-minded. It takes so little to amuse me, really. But, somebody else talk about it. Like I said, this is my second go-around on this one, and I still enjoy it.
I also rather enjoyed the kind of reveal of what happened on the planet in the past of, you know, kind of sacrificing, but, you know, in order to keep the peace. I like that exploration of where in history, as opposed to they're just these monsters that show up on a space station.
Right. It's a bit unsettling that it should be. Took that, but yeah, it makes it make sense that, okay, well, there obviously is a bit of a symbiotic relationship here in order to keep the peace. So,
yeah.
And we don't know how long the We're in Life span is. So, I mean, that ceremony may not have happened.
It's once a year, wasn't it? Isn't that what they said?
Was it once a year? Was that quickly?
It seemed like it.
I missed that. Okay, never mind.
Well, they're insects. They don't live long.
I thought they said once a year, once a season or something like that. Something of course, like that. Maybe a season is longer than...
Who knows how long a year is on that planet, too. Sure. So.
100 years.
A night on what's-its-planet was 42 years, so...
Yeah. No, it's a good story. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I'm still enjoying the Eighth Doctor stories. I meant to go back and listen to this, and I'll ask you guys maybe. Between the story, because there was two parts, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Between the parts, the end music to the first story sounded a lot more like Tom Baker's theme than it did the Doctor's theme. Did you notice that? Okay. I wondered, I heard that, and I was like, that doesn't sound like the Eighth Doctor's theme. And then the more I listened to it, I thought, that really sounds more like Tom's theme. And then I didn't think anything about it, and I thought, well, I'll go back and check that and see if I was right, and I didn't go back to check. So that was intentional?
I don't know if it was intentional, but it was definitely done. I don't know if somebody just queued up the wrong audio track when they
wondered if it was a callback because this is the Warren's first story in audio. I wondered if maybe they
just for fun
thought
they
that would
ahead.
Be neat to close it out that way. So
I don't know. The Eighth Doctor, I think I've mentioned this before, that I feel kind of like the Eighth Doctor audios, they tend to bounce around on the theme a little bit because it's early. It was almost like they hadn't decided what it was going to be yet, or what music they were going to use for it. And then when we really started, it was that very low pitched version of Tom's theme. And then it seems like it's morphed a little bit into a different subtle variant on that. But, his in particular, I find is different. But.
I think the Eighth Doctor series itself sounds like a meld between the Fourth Doctor theme and a new Doctor Who, like a new, like almost new Doctor Who. There's almost like a meld between the two. Yeah. Or new series. That's what I'm looking for. No, overall, it was a good story, and I'm really enjoying the season of The Eighth Doctor Adventures. All right, shall we move on to the comics?
Yes. In Bill's first comic book adventure, the TARDIS crashes into the heart of a Viking camp. But this is no interactive history lesson. A terrifying alien force has taken over the icy kingdom. As the snow melts, the Doctor realizes that he's about to face more than one unwelcome face from the past. And for a different flavor apparel, the Doctor takes Bill and Nardole on a trip to an intergalactic superstore, where they make an unexpected new friend. Or is that enemy?
Bum, bum, bum. I thoroughly enjoyed this one.
Why? This was a week of flashbacks, wasn't it? Or callbacks, it really was. Wasn't it? Did you see Fenric coming?
Nope.
Nope.
Not until the one thing when he climbed off the boat with yeah. and I went, oh, is that?
That's what I did. Yeah. I was like, no way. And then sure enough, it was.
Was that the first glimpse of the thing, or is that later when we get the first good look at it?
No, I think it was from the first glimpse. Because you only see the shadow on the outline, and I kind of thought,
is that a hemivore?
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought.
I didn't connect Finric completely. I thought they were going to like separate them somehow.
Well, that's what first clued into my mind was that, oh, is that a herbivore? And then I was like, oh, wait a minute. I wonder if this is going to be a fit. And then they went that route, so... starting off with the Ice Warriors showing up and then ended up being they're chasing the Flood, which has escaped the planet, which has overtaken. And then to have Finric show up on top of that.
At that point, Finric is just the icing on the
cake. Yeah, it was like, oh my gosh, we're just stacking one thing on another.
Ever since the Waters of Mars, I've always wondered, you know, I wanted to see an Ice Warrior Flood story of how they, what happened,
here
what was
go.
Going on. And this is, this doesn't.
Well, it's the closest
away
thing
from
to it.
Earth,
right.
Away
it's
from
away
Mars.
From there. But they give you some of the backstory
yeah.
And what they did and what they were, how they were containing it. So, yeah. And it, the Flood almost works really well with Finric because of his.
Really
emo.
Well.
Oh my gosh. I mean, it's because that was the idea of Finric, is that he had poisoned the water, and that's how the herbivores were coming. Resurfacing, but to have the realizing that, well, in an alternate timeline, this maybe is a better thing, and then turning, you know, backstabbing the herbivores in such a way that they're like, and end up having to turn against Finric in this timeline as well. That was really clever. It was very, very well orchestrated. The Doctor playing the chess pieces very much like the Seventh Doctor did in Curse of Finric. Just really cleverly done. Very, very well written.
It was really a stroke of brilliance. Where I'm reading the graphic novel where it compiled all the episodes. And so on, I don't know, page two or something, there's this little shot of the 12th Doctor fighting with an Ice Warrior. And I went, aw.
Yeah.
Because you get to that in the credits before anything. It's like, well, now I know the Ice Warriors are in this. So I kind of, you know, we've got Vikings. We've got, Vikings. Oh, icy. I wonder what's coming. Huh? And the Ice Warriors show up. And then the Flood shows up. It's like, oh! Didn't, and then Fenric shows up. It was like, oh, I just one after another,
just one after another. It just kept peeling back layer and layer and layer.
And so I wonder almost if that Ice Warrior was put there to, you know,
could be
here. I mean, chew on this.
Well, that's the cool thing is because you suspect the Ice Warriors are the enemy in this particular story, and they're not. And then you suspect that the Flood is the enemy in this story, and it is, but it isn't, because there's a bigger enemy in this story coming.
Up until the Flood showed up, I thought this story, was as it went along, was going to be how the Ice Warrior wound up in the ice at the beginning
thing.
Of the Ice Warriors.
I thought so too.
Which, if they still could have pulled that off, that would have elevated the story to such heights that the story to end all stories.
And what's funny is that even once Finric showed up, I didn't make the Viking connection to Finric until the Doctor was going, I've heard these names before. And I went, I mean, it was just so many little icing layers on the cake.
It was one of those moments like, oh, well, no wonder Vikings are here.
It justified the Vikings.
Exactly.
When the Doctor goes, oh, Vikings again. Vikings. That was kind of my reaction. But then it was like, oh, no, they needed to be here for this. This was so cool.
I love the fact that Bill Kitts, they don't have horns on their helmets. They don't have horns. We were just talking about that several episodes back about how that's a misnomer. Vikings didn't have horns on their helmets.
And wasn't that a callback to the Time Warrior? What, didn't Steven or somebody ask the first? Wasn't that a thing back in one of the first
Steven
Viking
asked,
episodes?
Well,
weren't there horns on the helmets? And the Doctor said something. Well, they didn't. That wasn't.
Well,
that was from the Time Meddler, wasn't it?
Or Time Meddler.
Yeah.
But it was that. I didn't think that dialogue was actually in there, because he looked at it and was like, this isn't a Viking helmet. And the Doctor is, what do you think? It's a helmet for a space cow?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Right. That's right. What it was?
It was the girl who waited.
Yes.
Or no, the girl who died.
The girl who died.
So it was a later one.
Where the vague Viking conversation helmet stuff it was from.
I don't know. Once at the end, it's like, yeah, sure. Let's throw all the episodes in this.
Yeah.
And this is one of those things that I have a little bit of trouble with, because I think it would be kind of easy in a way to just classify this one as fan service and go, ta-da, there you go. but it's done in such a...
What's an intricate story?
Intricate way. Yeah. It's so very carefully constructed. So as to, there's no hand-waving. Even with the timey-wimey nature of it, that Fenric is operating at a point previous to his encounter with the Seventh Doctor, but it's in the future.
Right.
It still meshes really well. Mm-hmm. And there's no shortcuts. So I don't know that you can necessarily say that it's just, oh, it was a light bit of, you know, fan service and that was it. Because it's not. It's a very well-constructed story.
Had it been just the Ice Warriors or just the Flood or the two of them together, you could almost consider it fan service. But because it's so the three pieces intricately put together, it's really Fenric's version of Forgotten Son.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would agree. The thing about the Vikings, as I was reading this, I was getting invested in their story, who they were chasing, what was the treasure that had been stolen, and I was really getting invested in that to a point where I was like, I don't feel like this is really going anywhere because we're not really not doing anything, only to get that sidestep, introducing the Ice Warriors, and then at that point I was kind of like you, I was like, well, what are the Vikings even doing in this if we're not really investing in their story? And then the revelation of the connection to the ancestry, I was like, oh, yeah, of course the Vikings had to be in this story. I didn't have to get invested in them. I just had to acknowledge they were there.
Yeah.
There's also I felt pseudo-subtle in one of the art panels during the flashback where we see the Ice Warrior spaceships. And one of them, the landing gear, come down, and it kind of looks tripod-ish.
It does look tripod-ish.
And I think that was done on purpose.
Yeah.
Which made me happy. I think there were a couple of little tiny nitpicks, things that maybe the art direction, in order to get to the next action piece or something, it felt like there were a couple of jarring jumps in scene transitions from maybe one bit to another, where all of a sudden the characters weren't where I thought they were in the confines of the story. But that's really kind of a minor thing compared to how well told the story was. So I won't nitpick on that.
Cool. Well, shall we do the last story in this?
Yeah. The Great Shopping Bill.
The Great Shopping Bill.
This was a fun little story.
Fun little romp.
Yeah.
Now, this was technically an extra one compared to what we had scheduled, yes?
That is correct.
Because it was included in the graphic novel.
So, for those of you that are following along at home, we're going to give you a bonus episode. So, not only did you get a bonus audio that we didn't warn you about, you're going to get a bonus comic book that we didn't warn you about.
What was this comic released in, do you know?
It was an issue.
It was an issue? It was issue 9. It was issue 9. Did that come out after...
Lost Dimension?
Lost Dimension?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is why I didn't include it.
Sure. Now, that's what I was wondering, though, is...
Because, but the fact that it's a standalone was like,
I did think it was interesting that when we were plotting this out, they always seem to do these graphic novels with 5 stories. And this particular one, I had 4, and I wondered if we were going to get a bonus story in
there. Well, this year seemed to be all 4 issues. Because this technically is 4 issues, too.
We've had to adjust a lot based on the previous year. It was,
but when they release
5.
A graphic novel, they always seem to have done 5.
Oh,
they
yeah,
always do the 4-story arc and then a bonus.
Or a 3 and a 2.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Or a 3 and a 2. Yeah, that's happened as well this year. So.
But yeah, it seems like that was the way it went for the first season, and then the second season they changed it up on us, and now it's all 4s.
Because we had the one where the doctor was going to get his coffee mug. That was the throwing one for 1. And then we had another one where... The doctor and they would go to that Renaissance fair and chase the jester, the fool, or whatever it was. So, but anyway, this particular one was interesting. I was surprised that they placed it where they did. But by that I mean they made mention to where we were.
Well,
we've already revealed Missy.
Yeah.
They've already talked about Bill had specifically alluded to something that had happened, and it happened late in the season, which I thought, but I can't for the life of me remember what she'd alluded to.
Scary Poppins was a thing.
Yeah.
And well, so that's obviously after the Monk trilogy.
Right.
And there was Ice Warriors. Didn't we have a mention of Ice Warrior going to Mars?
Yes, yes.
Was that in this one or the previous
one? No, it was this one.
No, well, was it in this
one? Or was it?
I thought that was in the previous one, but there was another mention that she talked about.
There was that one, there was a mention of Oxygen. Which
Oxygen.
Makes sense.
That was the one. Yeah,
which
that's
is
the one I'm
thinking of.
Before
the Monk trilogy anyway, so. Right.
Okay.
But yeah, the mention of the Ice Warrior story.
That's right.
Is really late in the season.
Very late. So there's obviously, this is going to take place... well, they don't have to. They could bounce around if they wanted to. But it seems like Bill here in this particular story, how they're starting her, if they continue to go along linear lines, is going to be somewhere between the two-part finale and the
Empress
Cyberman,
of Mars.
Or not Cyberman,
yeah.
The Empress of Mars, the Ice Warrior story. So
this story gets a pass in my book because it was a cute little story. It wasn't anything necessarily surprising. It was just a simple, we need a villain, but not really. We need a misdirection and an alien, and we need a fun alien location. Okay, go. And so they throw that together, and you get wonderful set dressing, like one of the signs in the shopping center that says, wibbly wobbly, limey wimey jelly. But more importantly, Bill and the Doctor have a discussion about Back to the Future in the opening scene.
That was true.
And
yeah.
That's like, okay, you had
that
me at hello.
Was true. And then he uses the line. He uses the line, "Great Scott!" later on.
Yes.
Yeah.
This doc, this scientist, allows his companion, just you know, he allows his friend Morty. Yeah, I don't care what you do the rest of this episode. I'm happy.
Well, I like the further exploration of Bill's compassion. The fact that she's willing to help this little girl and then not be too mad at her that she was, you know, using her the way she was.
Well, the thing that I had to go back and read was they were talking about how they feed on, and I thought, why is she being nice to this girl? Wanted to feed on her, but she was feeding on her empathy.
Right.
And that's what I had missed a beat of, and I was like, oh, why are you being so nice to this little girl that was going to try to eat you? Then I had to go back and go, oh, she was feeding on the empathy that was being generated from her needing to find the parents. So
they also did a phenomenal job with Nardole, really nailing the characterization, the dialogue, and the sparse use for the time period that this particular story is set. He's there, he's tagging along, he's with the Doctor. He has two or three lines of dialogue, and they're all like kind of one offhand, off-the-cuff jokes. But then he's got that one thing about, have you seen Bill lately? Oh, yeah, where did she run off to? And, you know, he's still driving the plot forward and being the important.
Well, I love the conversation that they're having about the way the robots look similar to a certain other domed robot, minus the plunger. That whole little exchange was I wish I remember exactly how he put it, but something to the fact that that's Domist or something like that. Like, it's the racist, that's Domist.
And that captured their chemistry.
It did. It really did. It was very well done. I don't know what else I could say about it. It was a fun little romp.
It was fun.
That Shapist.
Shapist. That's it.
Shapist. They're not Daleks. I still don't like them.
Cool. Well, what do we got coming up on the schedule, Sean?
Well, coming up on the schedule next week is some more candy jar fun as we dive into the Lethbridge-Stewart quiz book, which should be a fun time. And are we grilling each other on questions?
Yeah.
Is that how we're going to do that? We don't know what we're going to do.
I already decided that I read through it and I was like, there's no, I got like, I don't know, six answers right, because there's so much in there that and it was also things that I would read the question and go, oh, I should know this, and I would flip to the back to look at the answer and go, oh yeah, okay, I did know that, but I had forgotten that, or I would.
I've had that so far too.
I would not do well with a brigadier quiz.
Not do well with a brigadier quiz. No.
Although the things that were from the candy jar stuff, they came to me really quick. But that's the most fresh in my mind. But anytime there was a question about, you know, from Maudrin or from the unit days and the series and things like that, I'd struggle to come up with it. And then I'd look and go, oh, of course, yeah, I didn't know that. So.
Interesting.
Or let alone if there was a virgin mentioned.
Oh, yeah. Anything that was
or
outside
a Doctor of that. New Adventure.
Yeah.
Stuff that we haven't got to yet. Yeah.
There was a Lanyon Moore one that I did get. And I think there was a, I think I read this several weeks back. In fact, right after the first of the year. What was the other one that I was a big Finnish reference that I got?
There were a couple that I was like, oh, he shows up again.
Yeah.
Spoilers.
Yeah, there was. I did the same thing. I went, oh, I didn't know he was in that one yet.
Remember, Keith, you know everything that I've taught
minuet.
You, not everything that I know.
I think minuet. There was a question about minuet.
But so we'll dive into the quiz book, and then we will also take a look at the faux documentary, which I really wish there was a better way to describe it than that, called Liberty Hall, which is on the Modwin Undead DVD. So if you have that or have access to it, you can pull it up and watch that, because it's apparently a in-character interview with...
Have you never watched it?
I've not watched it.
Okay.
I still
you
haven't
watched,
ever
watched
it yet.
Oh, okay. I've seen it a couple of times. So. It's only about 8 minutes long, if that. I mean, it's not very long at all. So.
Okay.
Just an excuse for some more Lethbridge in our lives.
It's a funny little doc, mockumentary.
Mockumentary. So we'll be doing that next week.
Cool. Anything beyond that, or do you want
to... Yeah, it's on the website.
All right. Well, speaking of the website, you can go there and you can support us on Patreon. You can become a Patreon member and help this podcast out. Every little bit goes into this podcast. And thank you for those of you that are already supporting us through Patreon. Anything else we want to chat about before we close this show out, fellers?
Don't believe so.
I don't think so.
All right. That's going to do it for this week. Until next week, I'm Glenn.
I'm Sean.
I'm Keith.
Cheers.
Good night, everybody.
Be seeing you.
Thanks for listening.
You have been listening to Traveling the Vortex. Doctor Who and all of its associated programs are owned and trademarked by the BBC. No infringement is intended or implied.